This week's episode of the Sun on the Strip podcast is presented by Greenspun Media Group. Thanks for joining me. I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer and columnist for the Las Vegas Sun, and I'm here every Wednesday to give you an update on all the entertainment news from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, plus an exclusive conversation with someone you know or need to know in Vegas showbiz. So last week, I gave you the heads up that one of the Strip's most popular magic shows was about to announce its reopening. That show turned out to be Matt Franco, Magic Reinvented Nightly, which, as you now know, is set to return to the Link on April 29th. It's a big deal because Matt Franco was planning to reopen in December before COVID stuff spiked and restrictions tightened up, so you know he's really excited to be back on stage again. But then we got another big magical comeback announcement on Monday this week, and that's Penn and Teller returning to the Rio on April 22nd. This is kind of the full spectrum of magic in Vegas because Matt Franco had hit the five-year mark at the Link and was really going strong before the pandemic. And then you have these legends, Penn and Teller, who've been playing Vegas forever and playing at the Rio for 20 years. So both big welcome returns to Vegas entertainment. A couple other new shows announced this week, concerts actually. Billy Idol, who had just wrapped up a series of performances at the Pearl at the Palms when Vegas shut down last year. He's going to be at the Chelsea at the Cosmopolitan for four concerts this fall, October 16th, 17th, 22nd, and 23rd. Tickets go on sale this Friday, April 2nd. This is not the only thing or even the earliest show date on the Chelsea calendar. I guess I fell behind in keeping up with this place, but Panamanian singer Sek rescheduled his show from last summer to August 28th, and then John Legend has a concert there on September 18th. I think we're going to start seeing a lot of bookings coming through really quickly as these Vegas venues refill their calendars in the summer, fall, and winter this year. And then the other new dates are over at the Venetian Theater. Classic rock favorite Styx will be there for two nights, September 25th and 26th. Those tickets also go on sale this Friday. Dre's Beach on the rooftop of the Cromwell at Center Strip is the latest Vegas day club slash nightclub to reopen, and it's happening this Friday. Dre's will be open during the weekends for daytime pool fun as well as nighttime programming. Remember, all clubs that are open now are not allowed to do general admission and not allowed to flood the dance floors with party people. So it's a relaxed lounge-style experience with 50% capacity and all the regular rules and protocols. But it's still a lot of fun, especially having this very unique venue come back to life for the first time in over a year. Dre's After Hours in the basement at the Cromwell continues to be open for late night lounging as well. And the opening of Virgin Hotels Las Vegas last Thursday, March 25th, went off and did so in pretty grand fashion, considering it wasn't a typical grand opening party for a new Vegas resort. JC Hospitality CEO Richard Bosworth led a ceremonial unlocking of the doors. All the executives from the property's key partners like Mohegan Sun Gaming and Virgin and Hilton Hotels and AEG Live were there. And there was even some surprise entertainment from different Vegas musicians, acrobats, and performers. One of them was a past Sun on the Strip guest, Lydia Ansel, who had a DJ and music residency at the Center Bar at the Hard Rock Hotel. So it was really cool for her to be back on that property and for everybody to be able to celebrate this exciting new stage of such a celebrated spot in Vegas history. And the celebrities that turned out for opening night, like TV host Mario Lopez and John Gruden from the Raiders and Dana White from UFC, they made the rounds too and went to have dinner at Nobu or One Steakhouse. So it was another exciting night of big Vegas fun on the road to this comeback. This Thursday, April 1st, April Fool's Day, is the 10-year anniversary of Absinthe, the crazy popular circusy variety comedy show at Caesar's Palace. I've been talking to tons of people from the cast and crew and producer Spiegelworld in the last week because I'm wrapping up a big feature for Las Vegas Weekly magazine about this unique production show, and you can read it on April 8th. But Absinthe has been one of the most prominent shows to stay on stage when possible over the past year, and that makes this anniversary even more meaningful. And at least one of the artists taking the stage this week isn't normally in Absinthe. He's in Opium, Spiegelworld's show at the Cosmopolitan, which hasn't reopened yet. His name is Asher Trelevin. He's a brilliant comedian and performer originally from Australia, and he's just one of my guests this week on The Sun on the Strip. Jordan Kai Burnett is also a comedian as well as an actress, singer, and musician hailing from New York, who performed in bands and musical theater productions and improv shows and all kinds of stuff in New York and Los Angeles before she came to Las Vegas a couple of years ago to be one of the MCs of Magic Mike Live, which is set to reopen at the Sahara this August. Jordan and Asher just got engaged in December, and that means it was easier for me to get them together for this super fun interview this week. I will apologize in advance because they cracked me up a bunch of times, so I'm laughing a lot in this clip, but that's just what happens when you talk to two funny people at once. Check it out. This is Jordan Kai Burnett and Asher Trelevin. So did you meet in Las Vegas?
We did.
Yeah.
We had a lot of mutual friends, like tons and tons of mutual friends, but we never actually met. And by a twist of fate, we met on a dating app called Raya, which is for...
Fancy pants. Yes. It's for like hot people and rich people, neither of which
are either of us.
Neither of which we are.
But we each had a rich influencer friend get us on the app so that we could meet a rich person and change our lives. And instead, we met each other.
But the friend who got
that
me
didn't
on
work.
The app. It did not work at all.
The friend that got me on the app did it to like spite a guy that she didn't like so much, and we knew that this person really wanted to be on the app, and that they had been rejected because you get rejected, and if I got on, it would just like burn his ass so bad. I mean, you can't see it because you're just listening to me, but this thing doesn't really belong in that world. So getting on was like, oh man, I don't know what happened. Like, I put in my application and Raya was really into me, and now I'm on the app. It's amazing. I mean, maybe I've got something that you don't. Who knows?
So it ended up being a complete, very different thing than we expected, but it worked out actually. It's been okay for us.
Okay enough that you got engaged in December.
Okay,
congratulations.
Forever. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're really into it. Each other, the whole thing of, I don't know, all of it.
The whole shebang.
Yeah, it's a good time.
Jordan, Magic Mike Live was your Las Vegas debut, right?
Yeah, it was. I actually just celebrated my 2 years in Vegas last week. So my sort of my time hop app has been like, just got to Vegas, had my first rehearsal, just saw the show for the first time. Oh my God, my brain is on the floor. It's been really nice to revisit. But yeah, I came here. I moved here from New York. I was moved here from New York to do that show.
Mm-hmm. And we talked on this podcast about that show in the past and how special it is. We talked to Chelsea not very long ago. Your counterpart as the kind of MC of the show. But I wonder for you, how different was it for you to perform for Las Vegas audiences compared to all the different stuff that you've done in LA and New York?
Vegas is a really different beast, but at the end of the day, I think the show speaks for itself, right? So the audiences are wild and crazy, but like if you do comedy, the difference I would say is the energy is really different. Like when people come to Vegas, they come for a very specific experience. And those people that come to Magic Mike Live come for a very specific experience. So it's sort of a wild, it's different because the energy on a Wednesday and a Saturday can be really different. But people are there for something very specific, which I think is a little bit different than New York. Like New York audiences are New York audiences. They're like, we're here to see the theater. That's it. You know, whatever it is, it is. And I think the same thing with LA, you know, a little bit more forgiving, I guess. But in Vegas, it's like, we flew here to see this show, to do this thing. And this is an experience. It's not just a show. It's what our whole bachelorette weekend is based on, or it's what our whole anniversary weekend is based on, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So the energy is different. I think that's the biggest difference between Vegas and everywhere else.
Yeah. So that probably makes your performance and your experience on stage different. But is there something that compares to Magic Mike Live for you as a performer that you've done in the past that is kind of similar, or is it a whole different ballgame?
It is another level. I have never done a show that many nights a week at that, literally that volume Like, I've never been in a louder room that many nights a week. And there is nothing like watching, without like spoiling it for people who haven't seen the show, but there's nothing like watching people in the audience go on the journey when they see the guys for the first time, when they realize what's happening in the show for the first time. There's nothing like it. There's just something like it. And when I'm on stage doing it, I feel it in my guts. And it's, and it just, I can see Asher smiling because it's his favorite show. But it's, it just feels like I'm a rocket ship. That's sort of the best way to say it. Like, it's out. And then, yeah, and I think my job, Chelsea's job, is to make sure that if it's a choir audience or if it's a Saturday night audience, that they're getting the same show.
Is it really your favorite show, Asher? Because I love Magic Mike Live.
Like, I love the show. It's an awesome show. But because it's a male review, it comes with baggage of being a male review. You think it's going to be
right
the same thing kind of over and over again. And then the thing that makes it really problematic is that the reason why you're going to love the show is the pullback and reveal that we can't tell you, because if we do, we will ruin one of the most delightful reveals of the show. So you just kind of have to push people in that direction.
Yeah, but like, just trust me, it's not just stripping. And the thing is, like, I think one time I said to somebody, like, listen, it's not just a strip show, okay? It's also a comedy show. It's also about female empowerment. And some friend of mine was like, it's really important that it is a strip show. That's what makes it so great, is that it gets to be all of these things. It gets to be a great comedy and really about female empowerment. But it is a strip show. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, not to like pare it down to that, but I think all of the elements of it that make it special are what make it special.
Asher, was opium the thing that brought you to Las Vegas?
Yes, it was. I was in Edinburgh doing a show with my partner, who I was working with at the time, who's in opium as well, Gypsy Wood. We were doing a show there, and we were approached by, this is my little response, we were approached by Ross and Matt Hodges, the director of Opium. And they're like, we're doing this thing in Vegas. We're really interested. Do you want to come? And I was in a really weird place. So I was like, yeah, definitely. Put me on the golden spaceship with the gajillion dollars to go and work in Las Vegas. Yeah, anytime. Just put me on the thing. I was really, really like flippant and dismissive. And then they came back and went, so we're going to do this thing. And I was, oh, yeah. Please.
It seems like every story I hear about like the Spiegel world recruiting process, they're all a little bit wacky in one way or another, because it's such a different company, especially in Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way that they operate their business is really, it's really varied. It's really well thought out. They've been sitting on projects for years. They're also like spontaneous and fun and reckless and punky in the way that they do things. You know what I mean? They really ride the spectrum, a dialectic between extremely well thought out, really well executed, and, you know, very spontaneous and risky, which is kind of great, you know. And in the variety world, you just have so many different types of acts, so many different people from so many different communities and different countries in the world. The way that you need to operate to cast a show or cast multiple shows, you know, we've got three going now, is really difficult. And it's not like there's a bunch of people who all do this thing. There is one person that does this thing. This is one group. These are two people, and they're the only people in the world that do this thing. You know what I mean? So it's the variety world, you know, is an interesting world that way.
Did you get to contribute to creating these characters and kind of writing material and what direction things would go in for Opium?
Yes, absolutely. I contributed a bucket load. Some people would say more than was necessary or asked. And, you know, constant, you know. My background is as a stand-up. And then before that, a circus performer and a street performer. And I've written and made a lot of theater and a lot of stand-up. So it was very much I'm hesitant to use the word community, but like we as a team, all of the people who have been in Opium have contributed in very big and real ways to what that show is now, although it's still on hiatus.
I have been able to go to both reopening performances of Absinthe at Caesar's Palace. Yep. You were in both of them. I think you were my favorite act in both of them. You kind of, you know, steal the show, especially the first one in October, when, like, I feel like the audience was a little bit more apprehensive, you know. It was October, we've been through a lot since then, and then everyone's like, what's it going to be like to go to a show? And the point where you come on, the show's been going on for a while and momentum ebbs and flows as it always does, and then you came out and just like destroyed it, and everybody got all fired up all over again.
Oh, thank you. It's really nice to hear.
That's the best.
Going back to work is, after a long period, it is an intense process. You know, it's like, who am I? Am I still good? You know, am I still, are people still going to like me? And my internal monologue is always like, guess what? People have decided in the interim break, they hate you so much. But guess what? You're only going to find out when you get on stage.
Yeah.
Boy, are you going to find out. And that's always my internal monologue. So it always takes it's such a good feeling to be received well and to do your job well. And thanks very much for saying that. I love being in Absinthe, and I really appreciate the opportunity to like jump ship across to one of the other shows and work there.
Yeah. Are your plans to continue there until OPM comes back? Is that kind of the rough plan, or?
Yeah, that's the rough plan. I mean, I'm sort of really behind and into what Spiegelworld are trying to do in Vegas, so I'm really just trying to help myself and help the company in any way that they can going forward. You know what I mean? It's a huge community of performers. There's a lot of people. There's people who are hurting. There's people who have been out of work. There's people who are stuck overseas because of visa stuff. So I'm extraordinarily grateful to everyone there and everyone locally, nationally, internationally has all functioned to sort of allow us to get to a point where we can do shows again, which is just like the wildest feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah. For you too, because what you do, your style, your performances are very connected to the audience in a stronger way, maybe, than other people. You don't have that. If you did something like this on Zoom, you wouldn't have the same interaction. You know, you're not necessarily like a musician that's going to record an album during your shutdown time. So what's it been like for you guys to navigate through this crazy time?
It's actually very funny that you say that, because I am a musician, and I've been in Vegas for most of this shutdown. So for me personally, it's been difficult, because what I love to do is, even though I'm a musician, what I love to do when I'm, because I came up in musical theater and comedy, and then I ended up here. But my bread and butter is musical theater, comedy, and Baltimore. So no matter what it is, any of the entities that I find not only joy in, but am seasoned in, are live. Like, I love performing with my band live. I love doing every one of the musicals live, comedy live. So, you know, there's been some opportunities to like do some Zoom plays or do some readings here and there, or I recorded a couple of demos, like, which are all terrific, and I'm so grateful for the work. But it is the hardest thing is missing the actual work, which for me is like going to a place and doing it in front of humans, right? So, you know, I think we found a rhythm at some point, to just sort of, I think, the same way everyone did, which is just that bit of like, all right, we'll get on board because this is what it is. And, you know, things will come back when they come back, and we have to just sort of like buckle in. But I think that you are right in that what we both love happens in 3D.
Yeah.
And there's nothing else, there's no other version of that. And while there are, like I said, like the Zoom opportunities or the digital opportunities, they're cool and great, and again, grateful for them. It's, for me, it doesn't give me the same thrill. It doesn't give me what I deeply love about this, what I have loved about this since before I could walk, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, this is, it's also like, this is what I'm good at. I'm not You know what I mean? Like, sure, you can upskill and you can retrain and you can do other things.
But this is it.
But my skill set is on stage. You know what I mean? So maybe I could be great at Zoom. Maybe I could be great at making, you know, digital content. But
they
that
call
just
it TikTok. No, I'm just kidding.
But it's just that's not my joy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm not going to try and stuff myself into that space to ease my own anxiety about whether or not I'm relevant anymore, because my job is not as important as it was for a time.
But I also think, like, kind of piggybacking on what you said, it's like, it's not my joy, but it's also not my work. Like, the same way that, and I don't know how, I assume accountants haven't been out of work that much, but they've been working from home. You wouldn't ask an accountant to start doing, what's another thing that accountants don't do? You wouldn't ask an accountant to start doing
to work as a human odometer.
Yeah, that.
Inside a car.
Yes, great. That's great. Do you know what I mean? Like,
to sit in,
I think sometimes
to
it's
be
hard.
In, like, inserted in the glove
in the
box
car
and just
and what happened? Okay, count. And they just counted 1.1, 1.2. But I think it's important. Like, I have to remind myself this, and we're the worst.
That's a really horrible
I
weird
tried
metaphor.
I get there, but my point is,
why would you put the person
how about
in the
football?
Car?
How about football? Like, you wouldn't ask a football player, like, hey, soccer is ready. Do you want to play soccer now? Because it's different. So my whole point is, like, yes, it's my joy, but it's also my work.
And you wouldn't ask a football player
okay.
to be the engine
okay.
of a car.
I'm trying to make a point. This is what we've been doing for a year. It's just like bits on bits on bits until one of us passes out. And whoever gets sleeps first has to buy dinner the next night. That's it. That's the end of the game. But I think it is important. And like I said, like, I have to tell myself this, which is like, yes, my work brings joy to people. So much joy. But it also is my work. I have worked for a bazillion years to get good at a thing, the same way that an accountant gets good at a thing. And even though it does bring joy, it's still work. And that's the work I do. And I actually had a hard time because I was like, oh yeah, maybe I'll start doing Zoom stuff and maybe I'll start doing a TikTok. That's what kids call it. And it's like, it's not my work and it's not my joy.
Do you guys feel like you have similar, I guess, comedic sensibilities? Do you ever, I'm sure that you like talk about stuff and play around with stuff at home. I'm not going to be able to finish my long-winded question if you make sense.
Little soliloquy.
How about this? Do you ever plan on maybe like creating something together and working together if you haven't already?
No.
Actually, we did.
We did a project for a friend of mine, Brett Fistical.
He's also my friend. He's also my friend now.
Friend of mine.
So
Brett Vista, hi, it's me. Actually,
hi, it's also your friend Jordan, who you didn't have to ask, but you did because we're friends. Brett created I call it a drive-in circus, which is not what Brett would want me to call it, and so I apologize. But it was an outdoor, it was basically like a workshop of, could we do a show outside? And it was in the end of summer, and he asked us to host it and do the comedy together, and it was really fun. It was like a short, like I said, it was a workshop, but
it was
like a short version.
We worked together well. We were funny as shit.
We're funny, man. Ooh, and also we're both horrible.
Super Mario Brother lovers.
Yeah. We came up with like some really horrible stuff, like really gross stuff, which Brett loves, and then sometimes you pull it back. But I think that our comedy is different. Our stuff is different, but it also can be similar.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very funny.
I am the Jack Donaghy to her Liz Lemon.
He watched 30 Rock for the first time, and now that's his
very,
whole
it's
thing.
Very much.
That's his whole
She's
thing.
She's working on her night cheese, and I'm on my third scotch. She is working on her night cheese.
It's not wrong. You know what I mean? It's not wrong. But we didn't, like... We had a really good time working together.
We did.
And we made each other, we make each other laugh a lot. Like, not to be like, we met on Raya and we make each other laugh so much, which is like, sounds gross. But the truth is that, look, I think like three people are funny, including myself. And then I have a comedy partner, and her name is Daisy Egan. She's the funniest.
She is.
She's the funniest.
Tony Award-winning Daisy
Egan. She's Tony Award-winning Daisy Egan.
Youngest then, Tony Award winner, Daisy Egan.
Youngest female.
Youngest female Tony Award winner.
There's a guy from Maine that won, but okay, we don't talk about him.
I don't know anything about musicals. I'm just trying to get on board.
No, you're doing great. But I think that he's, like, really funny. Like, really, really funny. And I thought he was funny, but when I saw Opium, before I knew him, I thought he was funny. And I was like, I could. We'll see. You know? But I think that makes it a lot easier when we were creating stuff. Is like, we just make each other laugh. And if it makes us laugh, then we're like...
We definitely, like, contribute and help and sort of, like, throw ideas around. But the truth is, we're both so busy working on our individual projects that I don't think we'd find the time to make shows together.
Unless somebody wants to give us money to make a show, and then we'll take it, you know. But I don't want to have to do the work for it. I just want somebody to give us the money to do it, and then we'll do it.
Speaking of other projects, can you tell me a little bit, Jordan, about this Pat Benatar thing? Is that something in development? What is that about? Yeah. That sounds crazy.
It is an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet with the music of Pat Benatar and Neil Giraldo. And it's awesome. It's, you know, all the songs you love, and it's Romeo and Juliet, but with a beautiful twist. And like I said, a beautiful adaptation written by, one of my nearest and dearest, Bradley Bredwig, who's just sort of this, like, absolute brilliant, kind, extraordinary mind. But it's great. You know, off and on, we've been working on it for a long time, and I think the hope is that at some point when the world and the theater are alive again, maybe it'll make its way to New York. I think there's a need on Broadway for a Pat Benatar Romeo and Juliet. So I think so. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful and inclusive. And like I said, you know, all the music you love. And I've been very, very fortunate that I have become, that Pat is a part of my life now, which is something that breaks my brain every time I think about it. Cause as a singer, not even to be like as a female singer, but as a singer, when you watch, you know who Pat Benatar is, you know what her work is. It's every time. And she's the best. She's the best human. She's the coolest and the loveliest. And so it's something that really has been a huge part of my life. And I hope that it has long, 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 beautiful legs.
So Magic Mike is going to be coming back at its new home at the Sahara in August now, I believe, is when the comeback is.
Yeah, we're coming back in the summer. We're doing it. It's been a road, you know, to get here, but nobody could have predicted the pandemic. And so it's obviously added a bit of time, but it's very exciting because they're building a brand new space for us at the Sahara. And I think it's going to kind of, I think the Sahara is going to be the new place to be, and it sounds like they're doing amazing stuff in the rest of the hotel and the casino too. And that it's going to be really exciting. It's going to feel like a fresh start. And it all looks great, and it's going to be great to be back in the room with everyone. I love that show. I miss it so much.
And speaking of new spaces, we just found out last week, because the Rose Rabbit Lie restaurant has closed at the Cosmopolitan, which means that Spiegelworld is going to be taking over that whole space once again and building something new to go along with Opium. And
yeah,
when that comes back, you'll be a part of that big whole thing, which is exciting.
I can't wait to see what that is.
I know.
Or find out what it is. I'm just excited about the
process. I'm extremely excited because I know where all the secret passageways are in that space. There's a lot of little secret nooks and crannies there from the old Vegas Nocturne days. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what Spiegelworld and Ross and the team do with that space and how it connects to Opium. It's a, you know, I'm just so stoked that we made it through this pandemic, that they've survived. They kept everyone on. They took really good care of us. They were really communicative, you know, and now people are going back to work. Atomic's coming back soon. That's going back like a day or two after my birthday in May, you know, and then Opium is going to be a little bit of a lift because of this new space, but then what all that sort of stuff means. I mean, it's an exciting time for Spiegelworld and for circus and variety in Vegas. You know what I mean?
I think it's important, like, because I feel like really emboldened to say this, that like, we are so lucky that we under our roof both have work to come back to.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That like I could not. I'm so grateful for Magic Mike. I'm so grateful for Ross and Spiegel World. Like when like you were talking about Absinthe reopening, I remember when Absinthe reopened in October, this feeling of like, wow, Astra's in like the only show running in America. And that's insane, especially like coming from New York, where all of my friends who've been working in theater in New York forever, you know, there's no answers. And the unbelievable gratitude I have for knowing that like, we have stuff to go back to, like, even if it's August, even if it's whenever Opium reopens, whenever Magic Mike opens, the fact that like, we are on that train. I couldn't be more grateful. I know what a privilege that is. And I just feel like it's important to say that because there's a lot of people who don't have that. And I want everyone to be able to go back to work. And I hate that this has done this to this pandemic did this to our industry. But those of us that have these opportunities, I think it's so important to just say like, thank you. I'm grateful. I know this is a privilege. Like, I just think it's important to say it. That's all. I'm a really good person.
So. I'm agreeing.
Okay, it's time for you to get ready for the weekend with my three picks for live entertainment in Las Vegas. Terry Fader continues his new show, Who's the Dummy Now?, full of comedy and music and ventriloquism at the New York, New York Theater, Thursday through Sunday with two shows Saturday nights. This is a limited engagement for now, running through April 30th. Who knows, it might get extended. But if you're a fan of Fader's from his Mirage headlining days, go see him while you can in New York, New York. A new show is launching this weekend at the Alexis Park Resort, which has become sort of an unlikely hub for a lot of different kinds of Vegas shows during the pandemic. This one is called The Purple Piano. It's a brand new musical tribute to Prince, my all-time favorite artist. It's a one-man show created by producer and recording artist Marshall Charloff, and it'll play Thursday through Sunday at 8 p.m. in the Athena showroom at Alexis Park. I'm excited to go check this one out. And number three is also going to be off the strip downtown at Notoriety Live at Neonopolis at the eastern end of the Fremont Street Experience. You're going to need to go see Fabulous the Show, playing every Friday night. This is the new all-live singing drag review co-created by the great Christopher Kenny, who you know as Edie from Cirque du Soleil's Zumanity. Notoriety is another one of these off-strip venues that is really picking up steam with a lot of different great live entertainment, and Fabulous the Show is a fixture at 8 p.m. Friday night. So go and enjoy. That's it for this week on the Sun on the Strip podcast. Thanks again for listening. Extra special thanks to both Asher Trelevin and Jordan Kai Burnett for joining me this week. You can see Asher in Absinthe right now, and you'll be able to see him in Opium as soon as that reopens at the Cosmopolitan. And go get your tickets to see Jordan in Magic Mike Live at the Sahara. If you want to find past episodes of this show, go to lasvegassun.com/podcasts. You can also listen and subscribe to The Sun on the Strip at Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for listening. See you next week. Take care.